Hello and welcome to the PlanetIRL.com podcast and another episode of our winter interview series. I'm Cole and it's Canada Day here at Planet IRL as I'm joined today by site contributor Steph as well as Mike Cockwell who hails from the city of Edmonton. Mike has been heavily involved in an online campaign appealing to Monster to sponsor Paul Tracy in an IndyCar in 2010, and he has another issue that he's here to discuss with us as well.
That's right, Cole. But before we get to that, we have the distinct honor and privilege of speaking to the winningest active driver in North American open wheel auto racing today, the one and only Paul Tracy. So, Paul, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
Great. Just to start off, we were thinking that this is kind of an awkward place to start, we understand, but there seems to be some misunderstanding out there regarding how it is that you've ended up on the sidelines in the first place. I know that I've personally online been involved in a number of arguments with people claiming that the fact that you don't have a ride is because of your age or because of your driving style or any number of other reasons, and people who've been following the sport for a while understand that none of that has anything to do with what's got you sitting on the side right now. So I know it's kind of an awkward subject, but we were wondering if you could put in your words what it is exactly that happened at the beginning of 2008 that's put you in the situation that you're in today.
Well, it's kind of difficult. I mean, I don't really understand why I'm on the sidelines either. I know that I want to drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that I've been looking for a drive. Been talking, you know, to the various teams that have had drivers moving around, and it simply just comes down to, you know, probably 90% of the teams out there need some type of major sponsorship or cash inflow,
right,
to decide on hiring a driver. And you know, you've really only got you know, three or four teams that are completely in the position to just hire the best driver that they can. So most of those teams have drivers under contract, you know, long term, or you know, 2 to 3 year time spans. So
right,
the opportunity to get in one of those cars is not really available, and what is available are the teams that need to find the sponsorship to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So finding that sponsorship is very difficult to do in this economy, in this you know, economy that we're in right now.
For sure. Well, how about at this point, can you tell us what you've got set up for 2010 right now?
Well, I mean, I've got a verbal commitment from Geico and from Honda of Canada that they want to do the same program that we did last year, maybe more. But I don't have a signed contract with them saying, you know, until that is put down on paper and money has changed hands, and that starts really the ball rolling. You know, I have a verbal commitment.
Mm-hmm.
From people that you know, that I trust in what they say.
Right.
So at least I have that going right now, but I, you know, until everything starts to happen financially, then you know, it's not 100%.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so on that note then, let's talk about what happened with the campaign to convince Monster to throw some money your way. I'm going to toss this question over to Mike, actually, and let him talk a little bit about how this originated with the sending people to the Monster website to put comments on your profile there. Mike, do you want to chime in on that?
Sure. Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. A little cold up here in Edmonton, but... yeah, basically, I remember seeing a friend of Paul's, Alan, put a post on Facebook that finally Monster decided to put Paul on their athlete section. And so I went to it and noticed they had a shout-out comment section on it, and there wasn't anything there. And being, you know, within an hour of it being posted, I put a couple comments up and got an idea saying, why not have Paul's fans tell Monster how much he would bring to Monster and bring to IndyCar if they would step up and do more than having a big M on his helmet. And I brought you in, Stephanie, and we posted on every IndyCar forum, every racing forum. We've got all of the bloggers put a note on it. We had a couple of newspaper in-print articles done about it. Robin Miller actually emailed me saying this is a fantastic idea, better than his collecting $5 from every Canadian idea.
Yeah.
And it's run well. The amount of posts on there, Paul, has Monster noticed it? Have they mentioned anything to you about it?
Well, I mean, you know, Monster has been a good supporter of mine, you know, and I'm grateful for what they have done. Obviously, it's from my standpoint, it's been, you know, a little bit frustrating that they, you know, spend so much money on extreme sports and motorcycle racing that, you know, they've just gotten into four-wheel stuff, and the sponsorships that they've put towards four-wheel racing versus motorcycles or motocross or, you know, freestyle jumping, it's really been more concentrated in the dirt arena, whether it be trophy off-road racing or short course off-road racing, because, you know, for me, I'm a racing fan. I like all types of racing, but these guys that run the company, their heart and soul has been in the off-road community, whether it be motocross or desert racing, so to speak. So it's been difficult to get them to see the light. Obviously, they've got a new distributor in Canada. The guy, I've met with him in Edmonton, and he is very keen on you know, obviously road racing and, you know, car racing. So, you know, I'm sure they've taken notice. I hope you know, we haven't gotten anywhere down the road with getting to the point of them saying, okay, we'd like to spend some money, but every little bit helps for sure.
And while this has been going on, Mike and I and a few other people have been taking a closer look at this, and you've mentioned a lot of the things that you just said on Trackside as well. So we've had a bit of time as a community to sit back and go, okay. So obviously, I mean, PT, you are pretty much the embodiment of Monster's brand, and so it's obvious why they would want to support you to the degree that they have so far. But what factors could come into play that would give them that little extra push to bring them a little bit more involved and a little bit further? And so some of the things that we've come up with are the support that we got on the page is great, hundreds and hundreds of comments, which is super. But even more important than that is the content of the comments, and they're so passionate and they're so driven, and people saying things like, I don't watch the IndyCar series right now, but I would if PT was in a car. Or a couple people said that they regularly drink Red Bull and they would switch to Monster if they sponsored you full time. And really, Monster has the opportunity here to come up out of this looking like heroes if they are willing to sponsor you, because there are so many of your fans out there who really want to see you in a car and see you with a shot at actually a run at the championship again. And a couple other things that have changed since the last time this was talked about is the fact that Izod has come on board as a series level sponsor, which pretty much brings the whole demographic, the target demographic of the series, right into Monster's pocket, which is an interesting factor that I'm not sure has yet come to their attention.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how, you know, obviously where I'm pushing from my end, I have, you know, people that I work with management-wise, we've, you know, been kind of harping and barking up the tree for quite a while, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, they have so many things going on, and their staff level is not super high. I mean, a lot of the things that we hear from, you know, from just simply getting my profile on the website, you know, the responses, we're working on it, you know, but you got to understand, we got a lot of stuff going on, and you know, just to give you an example, as a company, they're obviously number, in number one in certain parts of the United States, even to Red Bull, but, they're arguably probably the number two energy drink brand in North America to Red Bull. You know, I don't know how many total employees Red Bull has, but it's probably in the thousands.
Yeah.
Last year, Monster had about 12 people on staff for the company. So, when they say we're working on it, you've got, one guy, one marketing guy who's in charge of all the motorsports and all the athletes, and you've got probably, a couple hundred athletes between all the different sports they sponsor, one guy to look after all of them. So, I guess the squeaky wheel gets the grease maybe, but, it certainly doesn't do any harm with the messages that the fans have sent, and I've just got to keep working at it. But I'm not the type of person that just is too pushy or demanding. Obviously we'd like them to get involved on the car and in some capacity.
Right.
This year we're talking to them about it. Obviously it's when it comes down to it, a lot of the questions they have are about ratings and television packages and networks and, not being on, most of the races not being on ABC or the big networks like the Indy 500. It makes it harder to sell when you throw out the cost of what these teams want to be a title sponsor. The numbers don't match up. So that it makes it hard,
It does, but at the same time, the thing that can't really be demonstrated on paper is that putting you in that car will actually make those ratings go up, and it's an upward spiral that would just naturally take place. But it's very hard to sell that without having the numbers on paper to back it up. Definitely.
Yeah, I know exactly. It makes it it makes it difficult.
Yeah,
but
we're
trying. That's all you can do is keep trying.
Well, and that's it. And if nothing else comes of it, at least what we've demonstrated through this is that the IndyCar community is a very strong one, the online community, and that we can mobilize if we need to. And if that's all that we can take away from it, then I think that's a great benefit. Cole, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, Paul, on a financial level, is there a magic number that teams usually look for? We've heard many different figures from 500,000 up to 3 million. I mean, is there a certain number that most teams ask for?
Well, I mean, it all depends on what you're looking at and what you're trying to achieve. Obviously, when you've got teams like Ganassi and Penske probably operate, at a level of, and they're the best teams. They're the teams that are always up front, and they're operating probably at a $8 to $10 million range per car, including the driver's salary. So, the conversations that I've had with certain teams and certain people, obviously, working with Jimmy and KV, what they need to operate the team for the season, you're looking at, the $4 to $5 million range. That's not including any driver's salary or anything like that. So that's what they need to operate the car. And they feel competitively. Are you going to go out on the mile and a half and drive away from the Penske cars? Probably not, but they feel that they can work smart enough and effectively enough on that budget to be running with them.
And I'll tell you one thing, as the season went on this year, they were the smaller teams were starting to look increasingly competitive, so we can only hope that as they get a little bit more time with the cars and ideally better budgets too, that they'll continue to work their way up toward the front. So just changing gears a little bit here, Paul, I'm not sure if you have caught wind of this online or not, but I'm just going to summarize it quickly for our listeners as well. Thomas Schechter has made a post on a forum online where he publicly spoke out about the fact that he thinks that the speed caps that are being put in place currently are hurting the sport. And this seems like the type of thing that you would have an opinion on, Paul. So I'm just going to sort of quickly throw out a couple of quotes from Thomas's post, if you don't mind, and then we'll get your thoughts on it. So Thomas says, I'm all for safety, but I think we are missing the danger factor our sport needs. If next year the month of May starts and we're doing 240 average speed, I suspect we'll have a couple more people attending qualifying. As a driver, I can tell you I want to go quicker and I want to risk more. I want to separate drivers who really want to lay it on the line and those who don't. Do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I can't disagree with him. Obviously, you know, Thomas is, you know, there's a certain, you know, area of people that don't want to see cars that are, you know, slowed down. I mean, you know, from my standpoint, I could agree that I could, you know, would enjoy the cars being faster, you know, more difficult to drive, more on the edge. I think that would separate a lot of the drivers and the teams from each other. You mm-hmm. would need to hire the best guy
yeah.
for the job instead of hiring the guy who has some money and is maybe not so good. You know, the cars, you know, and I can't speak for the mile and a half because I haven't done the mile and a half, but they, you know, all the examples that I can give, you know, in the past is, you know, this year I in an IRL car, I qualified at Indy at, I think a 223 or so,
mm-hmm.
and I think I qualified at Indy in 1992 at a 223, which
yeah.
was nearly 20 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, and I had run speeds at Indy before the split in 1994. We were running 234 miles an hour average.
Yeah.
You know, in the later years in CART, we were running, you know, places like Fontana, Michigan, and in the high 230 average range, you know, 237, 238. I think, you know, the lap record at Fontana is 240. So,
right.
You know, I think there is something to be said for that. I think the cars are a lot safer than they were back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have safer barriers now. You have a lot more technology. You have wheel tethers. You have a lot of safety measures in place to keep the drivers much safer than we were back in the 90s.
Right.
So I think the cars could stand to go, you know, probably 10 miles an hour faster than they do now. And I think that would make separate the drivers a little bit more.
Right.
So, Paul, now that you're not behind the wheel quite as much, so what other things do you do in your spare time?
Well, for me, I mean, it's a daily, you know, I have pretty much a daily routine. I get up and my wife and I get the kids ready for school, and then after they go to school, I go to the gym or I go for a bike ride. And then, you know, I've just, you know, in 08, when I stopped, you know, wasn't driving after I'd separated with Forsythe, it was, you know, very difficult day to day to figure out, you know, what to do with myself because I was so preoccupied with wanting to drive and, you know, that it was very frustrating to sit through the day and not know what to do. But I keep myself pretty busy with projects and, you know, been working on, you know, my own personal cars and, you know, just enjoying time with my wife and doing things that, you know, for most of my life I haven't been able to do. So, you know, I guess it's getting easier. I'm not so obsessed about getting back into a car as maybe I was after the two series got back together and I wasn't competing. But, you know, from my standpoint, I spend parts of the day, you know, I'm making phone calls and talking to people and talking to, you know, people that, you know, trying to get something together for next year. You know, just for an example, today I talked with Vassar, and I talked with a representative from Geico. I talked to Townsend Bell, and you know, we're all working for one common goal, and that's for us to get back on the track full time. So, you know, and then after that, we come home for dinner and relax and watch TV, and then start the day again.
Cool. You seem like you spend a lot of time at car shows as well. Is that, I mean, obviously being a car guy, that's a pretty strong interest of yours, but it seems to keep you pretty busy as well. We really appreciate the pictures that you put up on Twitter for us as well.
Well, thanks. Yeah, you know, I've got a couple things going. Obviously, I've got an appearance coming up in January at a car show in Toronto, which it's not probably not really a car show. It's the Motorsports Expo, a Canadian Motorsports Expo. I'll be there for a day for Mosport, and you know, obviously that's kind of my hobby. One of my hobbies has always been messing around with my own personal cars. So, you know, I haven't had a lot of time to go to car shows other than because I've always been busy. So, it's something that I like to do.
That's cool. Just continuing on the theme of things that we've seen you talked about on Twitter this year, you seem to have become the representative on Twitter for calling the NASCAR races. How did that come about?
Well, you have to do something during the NASCAR races to keep yourself occupied from falling.
Yes.
You know, it's hard for me to sit through a whole NASCAR race without having a nap at some point, because the races are so long and they can get, you know, at some parts pretty boring. And, you know, most of the time I'll watch the beginning and then either go in the garage or do something around the house or take a nap, and then usually come back to watch the last, you know, 30 to 50 laps of whatever it is. And, you know, and sometimes if I'm awake and I can't sleep, then I'll just pick things out during the race and comment on it and try to be funny about it. But
yeah, and we definitely appreciate the commentary. It's definitely amusing. That brings up a good point, though. Something else that I've seen people chatting about online off and on, and I'm sure that you'd have an opinion on this as well. You mentioned that the races are really long, and a few of us have been sort of tossing around the idea on some forums of whether the IndyCar series should be looking at having a few longer races in the schedule. Obviously, NASCAR has 30-plus 500 milers a year, and that's so possibly over the top. But do you think that there's merit in the IndyCar series? I mean, other than the fact that there are no tracks where we could really pull it off right now, but if we put that aside for a moment, do you think that there's any merit in the IndyCar series looking at running longer races? And if so, or if not, then why?
Well, I think you could probably afford to have, you know, maybe another longer race. You know, maybe a 400-miler or a couple of 400-milers instead of these, you know, 250 or 300-mile races that they have at, say, like a Texas or somewhere like that. But I think, you know, the problem that you're going to have with that is then, you know, you have to look at it from a devil's advocate point of view. You're going to have Honda or, you know, come back and say, well, we have to make the changes to the engines, and it's going to cost more money because we can't have the motors are built to run 250, and if you're going to run them this, then it's going to cost more, and it's always like that. So, no, I think that, you know, street and road course races are, you know, an hour and 45 to, you know, close to 2 hours is pretty good. And, you know, a lot of the races on the ovals, you know, maybe could be, you know, 50 to 100 miles more, because some of them are over, if there's no yellows, can be over pretty quickly. But I think the road races and the street courses are pretty good length.
Yeah. Okay. That's good input. Thanks. And just touching on one more thing that we noticed about that you were tweeting about earlier this year is we got to see a slightly different side of you in coming across as a proud papa. Your son did well winning a race in the Legends Series at the developmental level at Las Vegas. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so we were just curious, are we looking at the next Tracy that we can expect to see on the track, or is he just playing around?
Well, we're just really just playing around. They're you know, they finished up the Oval Series now, and now they have a break through Christmas and New Year's, and then they start with the road course stuff out at the track. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. I've only seen him go on a short oval, and you know, we'll see how the road courses go. But he's got a long way to go yet.
Do you think he's got it, though?
Hard to say. I mean, obviously these cars are not, you know, he's starting pretty late. So, you know, it's hard to say. We'll just see how it goes, trying not to put any pressure. You know, it's hard enough when you're a kid. So we'll just see how it goes.
For sure. And it's helpful not to have the pressure to follow the family legacy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Cole, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, Paul, something we like to do when we have drivers on is have like a quick fire sort of question session and more of general questions. So the first one I have is, what is your all-time favorite track to race on?
I've been asked that one a lot. I don't really have a favorite track. Obviously, you know, some of the races I enjoy the most were Toronto and Vancouver. You know, but I don't really have an all-time favorite track. You know, I like pretty much everything. So, you know, but my favorite races are the ones that, you know, in Canada.
Mm-hmm. You've had a lot of teammates throughout your career. Which teammates that you've had have you most respected as a driver?
Well, I think all of them. I respect them, what they've done and what they've achieved. I've had, you know, great teammates, you know, starting from when I started racing, you know, having Rick Mears and Emerson Fittipaldi as your teammate, and then, you know, Al Jr., and then, you know, I moved to Newman Haas, and then Michael Andretti, and, you know, and then moved from there to Andretti Green, and, you know, Dario, and Michael again. So, I mean, I've had fantastically fast and competitive and championship-level teammates throughout my whole career, and, you know, you can't really say, you know, who was the best out of all of them, because they were all great. They're all great drivers. So, you know, it was just that everyone was different and everyone had a different personality and you know, got along pretty well with all of them for the most part.
Mm-hmm. And along that same line, of all the drivers you've ever raced against in your career, which driver do you rank the highest?
I mean, that's another hard one too, because I've raced against so many great ones. But obviously, there's guys like Emerson and Rick were great. Mario was great. The time, you know, when I came along, they were kind of towards the end of their career, but still winning races. And you know, and then you had other guys like, you know, Zanardi and Montoya that have done such, you know, great things in their career as well. So, you know, those kind of drivers are really the ones that I admire the most.
Okay. And growing up, who were your racing heroes?
Probably my biggest racing hero was Ayrton Senna.
Mm-hmm. We hear that from a lot of people. The best moment of your career?
Probably winning the championship in 2003. In Australia, I had such a rocky up and down day, and then finally to win the championship was just a great feeling.
Well, Paul, I know that you're winning the 2003 championship was a great moment for your fans and for all of Canada as well, so I think that you'd have a hard time finding anybody who disagreed with you on that. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate having you on the podcast, appreciate you taking the time, and it was great to hear from you. Now, we're going to spend a little bit more time with Mike Cockrell from Edmonton, who's picked up the baton on another IndyCar-related issue, and this time he's working to save his home race in Edmonton. So, Mike, what the heck is going on up there? I mean, by all accounts, Edmonton looks like one of the healthiest events on the schedule, so why is it suddenly finding itself in trouble?
Well, it's kind of funny, because on face value, you'd think it would be with the amount of people that showed up and the success outside of it, but Northland's released their financial figures, and they had estimated to lose $1.5 million for the race, and it ended up being $3.9 million, and there's a lot of people here in Edmonton very, very upset about it, and on the other side, there's a ton of people that want to support the race and keep it going, I being one of them, and we have a bit of a movement to get it going and keep it going for a few more years.
That's great. So my understanding is that the series wants to keep the Edmonton race. They've made movements to try to renew with the city, and that the fans in Edmonton want the race, clearly, because the grandstands are packed all weekend. So really, that just makes Edmonton City Council and this group of naysayers that needs to be convinced. Is that right?
That's correct. It
it seems to be a bunch of people in these economic times that see the city council having to tune up to $3.9 million that get upset about it, but the city itself brings an estimated $80 million worth of revenue in for the race. Where these numbers come from are hard to say, but there are a number of people that believe this race should continue. Myself being one of them. I think where the problems have come from is on the revenue side in the sponsorship securement. Northlands, the operator of the event, does a fantastic job of operating it, and they are not a revenue company. They're are owned wholly by the city of Edmonton as an event producer, and they do not seem to have the wherewithal to be able to secure the sponsorship. So what we have done is trying to get together a group of people, of business people involved in the race that are directly involved. We're trying to get a few people that have outside interest to the race, including fans, businesses as well, and we're trying to present a different business model to the City Council of Edmonton to keep the race going.
Okay, Mike, so then from our side, what is it that IndyCar fans can do to help you and your group convince City Council to keep the race in Edmonton?
I would think that anybody that's listening, if they can get to the City of Edmonton website, if they want to email the city to let them know what the race means to them, how they've got about learning about Edmonton from the race, would be a big plus. If anybody wants to email me directly, they are more than welcome to. My email address is ccic.mike@gmail.com, and please forward it to me. I would love to put your comments onto something.ca website and help out keep the race going here.
Okay, so just to clarify, the website that you mentioned is ontosomething.ca, and this is a website that's been created by your group that's working to keep the race in Edmonton. There's a lot of great stuff on there, like statistics on the amount of money that the event brings into the city, what the attendance was like back in the Champ Car days when the attendance numbers were being published. There's what has been invested and the return on investment that's been seen on that. There's all kinds of great stuff there. So people can visit there. And if I'm understanding you correctly, Mike, you're not just looking for people who are from Edmonton to send you comments. You're looking for anybody who has any sort of impression about the city of Edmonton from anywhere that IndyCar reaches to contact you and give you some comments to take to City Council. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm trying to secure comments from any of the drivers, race teams, IndyCar staff, as well as anybody that's attended the race or anybody that's looked at any of the advertising throughout North America about Edmonton and it brought their attention about the race to it. Please email me and let me know, because we need to let City Council know that there are people outside of Edmonton that know that this city does exist because of the race and the benefit that it does bring to tourism.
Okay, great. So then what we can ask our listeners to do, and we'll post these email addresses and sites on the post where we put the podcast up as well, but we're asking people to visit ontosomething.ca, have a look at the information that's there, and then email you at ccic.mike@gmail.com. Is that right?
That's correct. And if anybody has any other questions about it, please include them on my email address. Hopefully we can get this race straightened out get it non-political, and keep it going for a number of years. I've got a bunch of different people that have already commented on the race and how important it is to the IndyCar series and what it feels to them. And I can only hope it's going to be here for another 10 years at least.
Well, for my part, I can tell you that I made it to the Edmonton race for the first time this year, and I was amazed at the enthusiasm in the crowd and the friendliest people, the most knowledgeable and enthusiastic fans, with the possible exception of, say, Indy or Toronto. But for sure, the people of Edmonton deserve to have this event, and we will help you out in doing anything that we can to make sure that it stays in Edmonton. Thanks so much for talking to us about this, Mike, and I hope that it helps you out.
My pleasure, and I hope that Planet IRL can put up a blog comment that I do have. I will send it to you guys, and if you want to post that as well, it would be very, very appreciated.
Sounds good, Mike.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, on behalf of Cole, Mike, I'd like to thank you for joining us, and best of luck to you in your crusade to keep IndyCar racing in Edmonton. We'd also like to thank Paul Tracy for joining us earlier in the podcast, and we'd like to thank each of our listeners for tuning in as well. Remember, planetirl.com is your source online for blogs, forums, podcasts, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar series and beyond.